I'm not charismatic enough to be a cult leader.
This is InfoCast 5000.
Hey, everybody. I am not a cult leader. I'm just Baron Malley, one of the hosts.
And this is suspicious of Baron being a cult leader co-host, Sam Acuff.
No need to be suspicious. This is the podcast where we dive into the history of things familiar to everybody. Join us as we try to figure out why everything exists, especially cults.
And last week, we tried to figure out why we tried to figure out why rockets exist, and I just had a stroke. This week, we are doing a little bit of Dirty Bits on rockets. And what are Dirty Bits, you ask? Well, Dirty Bits, if this is the first episode you're ever listening to, you're listening wrong. You should listen to the last episode first. Don't be stupid. But then come back, and I'll explain to you that Dirty Bits is where we have some extra information from the original arc of the last episode, or just things that we felt like we couldn't share enough of in the last episode for time restraints that we are diving back into this week.
That absolutely was not confusing at all, and I totally got everything that you said. Also, we have a special guest again this week. Introduce yourself, sir.
Hi.
Hey. Hi.
What is your name? Who are you?
Hi, I'm
What
BJ.
Do you do?
More information of who you are.
Hi, I'm BJ, and I am on another podcast called Medicine for the Dead, and I like cats.
Great, kind of cats? Great stuff, BJ. And what
I want to talk about cats more.
BJ was on last week, and I think we absolutely killed it for rockets. No need for notes on that. Don't DM me. And
did you kill it with rockets, or
a lot of things were killed with rockets, and I just shared some of those instances, but we're going to share more this week.
You just made me think of another rocket. Thank you,
BJ. Loves rockets, if you couldn't tell from last week. Again, if you haven't listened to last week's episode, go listen and then come back. Also, BJ, I meant to ask you last week, if you had to pick your favorite episode of your own podcast, what would that be?
Ooh, so I got to interview, if anyone's a Top Gun fan out there, I was on I'm an F-14 nerd, if you know what that is. Cool, if you don't, fuck off.
We really like to shrink down our demographic here.
Oh, okay. It's fine. They'll stay. I was listening to another podcast, and I found out this guy, Bio, loves to do interviews. And I was like, well, I want to talk to this guy. And it turns out he was in an iconic scene in Top Gun, he was one of the people in the flipping the bird scene. He's in the backseat of the Russian jet. So I got to interview him, and 2.5 hours later, I got yelled at by a Top Gun instructor for taking too much time. Jokingly, but still, it was like a life's accomplishment.
Honestly, you're very patient because I wouldn't have even had him on if he wasn't in the volleyball scene.
You have seen Top Gun then.
I've seen only the volleyball scene.
There's a karaoke scene too.
Why would you skip only to that though?
You ask too many questions. And I think you know the answer. So let's move on.
Tom Cruise
Would you say we're playing with the boys right now?
I don't even get that reference because I watch it on mute. And I just put in my own audio per my fantasy.
Was that song by Kenny Loggins or Cheap Trick?
Cheap
Trick.
I don't know, actually. I think it's one of those two.
I don't think it was by either. That's what I'm going to say.
It was definitely by one of them.
Kenny Loggins did Danger Zone.
He did Danger Zone.
That's all I know.
Okay.
This is some hot rocket gossip, guys.
Oh, we're talking F-14 comments here.
So, and one more thing I want to say right at the top. Sorry, we will start in a minute. We usually save these plugs for the end, and I didn't even prompt Baron that I was going to do this, so hopefully this doesn't throw him off too much. But we usually share at the end to like, subscribe, please write us a review, tell your friends about us. If you like us, tell your friends. It's the best way to get it going. We're still trying to extend our reach, and we just do these plugs at the end. And if you're like me, you don't listen to the end of the podcast, and that didn't occur to me until this week. So I'm just throwing it out there at the top.
And another important thing on top of that.
Another important thing.
If you are listening on Apple Podcasts, use your fingers. Use your wiggly fingers.
Use your best fingers.
Touch your phone screen and type in a little review on our podcast.
Great. This is the kind of
that thing.
Great stuff we can expect from Dirty Bits. And Dirty Bits is a relaxed version of our normal, so please excuse the inconsistencies.
I mean,
anyway,
I'm relaxed, so it's good.
Wow. Sorry about all the burps. Who wants to go first?
Oh, I'm going first.
All right.
Well, yeah. Let me take asking. It away. Yeah. Let me get this shitstorm of a story out of the fucking way.
I can't fucking
and then
wait.
I can listen. I can check out and not deal with anything
We're
you guys are saying.
Not at all. He's not going through his laptop trying to desperately find a script at all.
All right, guys. Let's talk about Nikolai Kubalchich. I think
Kubalchich. Yeah, you got it.
Nikolai Kubalchich, originally a castaway from the Russian rocket technology push, but he left his own mark on the history of rocket development in a unique way. And not only was he was a scientist, but also a revolutionary or a terrorist in some eyes. And this is the crux of the reason why his work wasn't recognized as important until several decades after his death. He was born in 1853 in Kurovetsky, Chernigov.
See, when I get there in my research, I just say Russia.
Oh, well, yeah, that was coming. This is basically Ukraine.
This is pre-Russia, Russia.
But names are important. You know, they named that for
guarantee
a reason.
Guarantee you not a single person is going to remember what you just tried to say.
just follow with me slowly. Korop, Krolevetsky, Chernigov, Governorate. Which was basically Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And he was the son of an Orthodox parish priest, and he did not want to follow in his father's footsteps, so he went to gymnast school at the age of 11.
Was his father like the opposite of a gymnast?
His father was a parish priest, so I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess that is the
just
opposite.
Fuck robots, I guess, yeah. You've heard about the Olympics. It's just like orgies every other day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty sure back in Ukraine in the 1800s, either you were a priest or you were a gymnast. Yeah, that was your life choices. Yeah.
Everyone's a 10.
So after he joined the gymnast school, he spent a short time in seminary school after, but then he returned to the gymnasium again and he gained a silver medal for his entire region.
How old is he during all? Like, when did he become a gymnast?
It was between the ages of 11 and 18.
And he had that much autonomy as an 11-year-old to be like, fuck you, Dad. I'm going to gymnast school.
I don't know if it was, I mean, I don't know what the motivations were.
You're in like 5th grade here at 11. Did you just pack a little hobo bag and go to gymnast school?
Are we talking like Soviet Russia at this point? What was the year?
1853.
Nope, not Soviet Russia. Yeah.
No. This was serfdom Russia. This was Tsar Russia. But
they probably just thought he got eaten by wolves.
It could be. Yeah,
he comes back in a leotard and he's like, oh, I wish you got eaten by wolves.
My impression of the conversation kind of went like this, like, son, do you want to be a priest like your dad? No. Okay, well, then you're going to be a gymnast. Okay.
I don't think that's how it went. But go on.
I don't hear any slapping sounds or like Russian screaming in there. So.
So
there's a lot more borscht in the real story.
Oh, God, borscht. In 1871, at the age of 18, he heads to St. Petersburg School of Railway Engineers.
That's a typical lateral move, gymnast to railway engineer. Yep.
Yeah, you would say he flipped right into the school.
It's a tale as old as time.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess maybe he got injured or something. The gymnastics did not work out for him. But this is where he dives headfirst into the science. The science. 2 years later, attending St. Petersburg Emperor Military Medical Academy, studying medicine and working on rocket propulsion experiments.
Nice.
That's where he's at.
Nice.
In 1875, he is arrested for lending a book to a peasant.
Ah, what a piece of shit. I was just starting to like this guy.
During this time, Russia was still under a serfdom, and the serfs, they were basically considered slaves, so it was a big no-no to let them read, basically. They would start getting ideas of their own and, you know, start thinking for themselves and getting...
No, we get it. Yeah.
What's next, the women? God.
Yeah. Oh, man. I was about to say I yearn for a time like that where you could do so many lateral moves with your career, like gymnast, railway school, science school, medical, rocket thruster.
Prisoner.
But the other side of that is you had serfdom and women couldn't vote. So
yeah, you can't have everything. You would be a serf. You would absolutely be a serf.
Yeah, I'd be a serf.
BJ would maybe be, he'd be a restaurateur. I feel like
in pre-Soviet Russia.
I would be dead. So for
you wouldn't have made it past gymnast school.
I'm still stuck on restaurant tour. Oh, have pierogi.
Back then, it was like rock soup or borscht.
Yeah, or pierogi.
Or pierogi, okay.
Yeah. We'll yeah, you'd be lucky if you got the borscht warm. So for this crime, Nikolai is thrown in prison for 3 years. And this must have been the critical moment that he decides that the Tsar regime must fall.
He was pissed. Don't piss off Nikolai.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, don't piss off a guy that's academically trained in explosive composition.
And a gymnast. It's like a one-man Ocean's 11.
He's flipping
around.
He's going
to get you by train.
Is he going to flip over you? You're going to have a bob in your pocket. You don't know how it got there. He's just going to pop right out in front of you and smile.
Yeah.
And then boom.
And he's got all his dad issues, so.
Yeah.
He's a little sexy.
Yeah, and speaking of which, after being released from prison, Nikolai wastes no time in joining the group Narodnaya Volya, a.k.a. the People's Will.
That was a good pronunciation.
Thank you. Yeah. As their primary explosives effort.
In their explosives effort.
The subjugation of the proletariat is not the only reason many wanted Tsar Alexander II and his regime to fall. Losing in the Crimean War had left a bad taste in the mouths of many as well.
And his decree to ban dancing in the Ukraine.
Unless there's borscht involved.
God, I fucking love borscht, by the way. As a restaurateur.
Toward the end of February in 1881, Nikolai was crafting missile shells to give the Tsar a spectacular and explosive demise. Everything seemed to be going well with this assassination plan. Unknown at this point to the revolutionaries, however, the police were onto the plot, and on the 27th of February, arrest the man that would have been in charge of shooting the missiles to the correct location.
When was it? 1881?
Yeah.
So he was just making a bunch of makeshift rockets to shoot at...
Yeah, he was like, I am going to...
I think I got sidetracked with all of our riffing, but like, holy shit.
Wait, I am
what
going
was he,
to...
What was he trying to shoot at? I didn't catch that part.
He's trying to kill the Tsar. He joined this revolutionary group.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
So he went... He made...
He made missiles.
I mean, if you're gonna revolution, that's a good fucking way to revolution.
It's amazing. It's amazing. He must have covered them up with like I just picture like a tarp with a sheep on it, like a fake sheep.
Yeah. So put a bunch of shawls on it and called them his babushkas.
No. This babushka. Babushka eat lots of sheep and whatever that food was we've referenced earlier that I'm a restaurant tour of.
Are you sure those not missiles?
No, babushka eat much borscht. Babushka very big and sensitive about weight. You leave babushka alone.
I don't know. They look a lot like missiles.
But nobody knew what missiles were yet, right?
So. Right, yeah.
He's like, what are those sticks? Nothing, man. Nothing. Just babushka sticks.
Well, it's clearly not a babushka, but I don't know quite what it is.
If you're going to name something threatening in the future, you should call it a babushka, whatever it is. Like, oh, no, this is just babushka gun. What does it do? It kills many people, but it's babushka gun. Very nice. Very happy sounds.
I give it the shout.
Yeah, it plays rainbows.
Take a shot every time we say babushka.
Babushka.
Unknown at this point to the revolutionaries, however... The police were onto this plot, and on the 27th of February, they arrest the man. Oh, I already said this, but I'm going to reiterate a little bit.
Because fuck it.
Well, no, it's an important piece to the rest of this plot. Yeah, but on the 27th of February, they arrest the guy that's supposed to shoot the missiles to kill the Tsar.
Oh, they got the trigger guy.
Yeah, they got the trigger guy. So backwards. Between the February 27th and March 13th, the missile plan is scrapped, perhaps due to losing a key player, and it became impractical with the police closing in. So on the morning of March 13th, after ironically signing a constitution for the people, the Tsar's bulletproof carriage is rocked by a bomb lobbed in his path by a member of the Narodnaya Volya. This did not take out the carriage, however, but it did injure several of the police escort, also known as...
Babushkas.
They were known as Cossacks. Cossack babushkas. But they were known as Cossacks.
He shot all the ball sacks.
So stupidly, after all of this happens, Tsar Alexander ventures out of the carriage, either through sheer panic or wanting to comfort his injured policeman.
Probably not the latter. I'm going to go ahead and say he didn't give a shit about it.
The history books painted it as like, oh, he was so concerned about his policeman.
Yeah,
that
he probably
he
wrote
water.
Those history books. Yeah.
Either way, he steps out of the carriage. Kaboom, blew up by a suicide bomber. That's the end of Tsar Alexander II.
Holy shit, that took a turn.
Yeah.
They had a suicide bomber too?
Yeah, there was three guys that were going to perform the assassination attempt. I don't know what the third guy was doing. He did nothing. There was one guy that was lobbing bombs, mm-hmm. and then there was another guy charging with a bomb, just at the czar, pretty much.
We call him Rambo.
The third guy was the cook. He made sure they had warm borscht every night. Support, you got to keep morale up.
Is that like it's got to be close to the first suicide bomber, right?
No.
I don't know.
I'm sure that goes way back.
Yeah, I guess he just light the thing. Like, Teddy, come here.
Yeah.
Hold this. Run that way.
You take your least favorite friend and
maybe voluntary or voluntary.
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 So the wording and translation here, it gets muddy. But these were very well explosives that were designed by Nikolai. And they might have had some kind of rocket element to them because he was working on these tiny rocket/bomb designs.
Cute rockets.
At the time. Yeah, cute rockets.
Baby rockets mini.
On March 17th, Nikolai is arrested for his role in the assassination. Some would argue this is where his true legacy lies. As his impending mortality finally sinks in, Nikolai designs a spacefaring rocket as his final blueprint, furiously writing and calculating like a madman.
In jail?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah,
he's do everything like cooler.
They just wait until...
I think you mean under gunpoint.
Well, fucking... I mean, I don't... Constantine, last week, you know, one of the three fathers of rocketry, he came up with all that shit in a log cabin without electricity, you know?
Yeah, that was pretty nuts.
Yeah, and this guy is like, I'm going to design a rocket in jail. Fuck you. Like, if I was in jail waiting death, I'd be like, fuck you guys. I want to cry in the corner for a while.
It did kind of seem like... Like this was he must have had a moment when he was like, okay, I guess I'm gonna die for this, so I might as well have something that was better than explosives that everybody could remember me by. And he puts his silver gymnast medal to the side.
No, he kisses his hand and puts it on the medal that they somehow let in the jail cell with him.
But yeah, well, that was the thing, is like his lawyer was talking about. How that this was all he could think about.
I am blown away that he had a lawyer.
Oh, yeah, he had a lawyer. Yeah.
Totally uprooted my picture, how I pictured this part of the world during this time.
He had a trial, the whole thing.
I thought they just brought you out in the woods and fucking shot you behind the ear.
That was later.
Oh, there was, I mean, we could talk about it if you guys want. I didn't put it in the actual script, but there was a whole execution performance that happened.
Well, that was everywhere. Now we're splitting hairs.
Yeah, glamour death, whatever.
For a long, we as a people loved watching people kill other people.
It's the paparazzi.
Oh,
that was good. I know.
Ah.
and but as I'm thinking about it, I have to say, so on the day that he was supposed to be executed, there was a bunch of the other revolutionaries, the People's Will.
Thank you.
They were strapped to chairs that were called the Chairs of Shame. And they were rolled out to the gallows in these, like, wheelchairs of shame is what they were called.
I feel like they really got the better end of the deal. That they had to sit in chairs while their buddy got, I assume, mauled by a bear? How did they do it back then?
They just hanged. They just got hanged.
You know what's fucked up? So, when my band used to tour, we did the Middle East stuff. We were in Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. And they were like, do you guys want to go out in the town? And we were like, I mean, probably not. Probably
slightly nervous about where this is going. Yeah.
And they told us that if you're a Westerner, because they'll do like, if you steal something, they cut your fucking hand off, right? It's Sharia law.
Mm-hmm.
And this happens all the time. So they have this square where this happens. And they said that it's the biggest insult to the person if there's a Westerner in the front row. So if they see you walking around, they'll be like, hey, come here, and like trick you to the fucking front row and make you watch somebody get their fucking hand cut off.
Jesus.
So we were like, yeah, no, we're good on the town. We're just going to stay.
Did you watch a guy get his hand chopped off?
No, but I did get drunk and eat pork in Saudi Arabia.
Was that an illegal pork establishment?
Wait. Black market pork? None of them eat pork.
No pork, no booze.
Then where'd you get the pork?
I know.
And no booze. I guess no.
I got hammered in Saudi Arabia in the weirdest. I'll tell you all about that later.
but anyway, so some would argue that this is where Nikolai's legacy lies, because he designed the spacefaring rocket while he was in prison. And it is one of the first designs for any such vehicle, whether it was viable or not.
Which
it
wasn't.
Was called the Fuck You Dad.
I'm a dancer, goddammit.
It is scientific consensus that his designs were flawed because they were relying on charges of compressed gunpowder to break free from the Earth's gravity as opposed to liquid explosives. But he did correctly predict the usage of multi-directional thrust to cause change of direction and have separate compartments for the cabin and fuel storage. And on April 3rd, Nikolai is hanged for regicide.
That story took a turn there.
I feel like we kind of already knew from what I said.
Up the ladder, up the ladder, up the ladder, down the ladder.
But his plan survived, and resurfacing, they eventually resurfaced in 1918 from a dusty envelope because what ended up happening is one of the guards in prison got his designs, and they said, holy shit, this is genius, and he brings it to the Ministry of Engineering at the time, and they say, oh, this guy's traitor, we are not going to use these guys' designs, and then they just put it in a drawer until 1918.
There's so much that ends up on our podcast of documents that you would think, based on the temperament of the people that hid these documents, they would have just burned them. But there's always someone that's like, should we destroy? No, put it in cabinet.
Well, there was definitely some debate there over whether they were going to keep it or not.
Whether it's that or it's incriminating evidence, like from other, like when we cover more like criminal based stuff, like burn it, burn it. What, like, were paper shredders not invented there yet?
Well, somebody must see the value in it. Like, obviously, like, I wonder how, if that had happened, like, how far backwards would society be right now?
I'm not saying it wasn't beneficial. And I'm
We'd be like, here, like,
but,
man, can you believe that one day we're going to be on the moon?
There's a bunch of people with, like, missiles disguised as grandmas walking around the streets. And
it's a babushka cannon.
No one's the wiser.
I love my missile grandma. It is of debate whether it was Nikolai's terrorist activities or manned rocket designs that influenced the scientific community more. Someone argued that his acid time bomb fuses or his development of rocket engines that could burn gunpowder more efficiently, all conceived as assassination plans, were more or less practical use to the scientific community. But through sheer influence, Nikolai Kibalchich made his mark on modern rocketry today, recognized as another genius in the field.
Nice.
Fucking
A. There's a statue of him in Santa Fe.
For real?
Yeah.
Why?
Because he's one of the quote-unquote fathers of rocketry.
I was going to say, if last week we covered the quote-unquote three fathers of rocketry.
He's like the grandfather.
He's the cool uncle.
Yeah.
No, he's the cool fucking uncle that gets you drunk at your bar mitzvah. And he's just fucking like, hey, fuck those guys. You want to see something blow up?
But yeah, there's a rocket science history museum down in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
And they just honored like the craziest fucking guy. They had like kind of a big pool to choose from based on our research, and they were like, this one.
Yeah, this is the one.
We're going with him. BJ, you're the guest. You pick if you want to go next or if you want me to
what
throw
you got?
Some shit down.
I got a whole bunch because I just love Russians.
All right.
And they're true sense. Hey, with the trains here, by the way. I don't know if you guys announced the train on your podcast, but we do on ours.
So. We haven't formally. I think
we always cut it out.
We always cut it out.
We always stop recording.
Just let the train be.
We record right next to a railroad track, guys. And in honor of BJ, we're going to keep it in.
Yeah, our studio is literally like 10 feet from the intersection. So, like, it's fucking.
Well, we overlook the motherfucker right over here. Yeah.
Where should we start? Well, we were going with rockets last week, right? So
yes, we did rockets.
Obviously, we're on rockets here. So
I spent hours and hours researching rockets.
I've done
BJ.
Nothing but talk about rockets for a week.
Here's some of my favorite. I'm gonna go with rockets/explosions. Is that fair? We'll go with little bits and pieces. All right, let's start World War II. Right. All right. So America was trying to figure out, like, the Japanese were like, all right, fuck it, dude, get in the plane, fly the plane into the ship. Gotta, you know.
Yeah, they took a note from Nikolai.
Yeah. Blow the shit up.
Kamikaze.
Kamikaze, yes. So the Americans didn't want to do that because Americans are, you know, not suicidal. So they were trying to figure out a way to make a guided bomb, right? Mm-hmm. So there was a program that's one of my favorite military programs of all time to make a guided bomb via pigeon. So what they would do is they had a laboratory, right?
I'm excited.
And
you got my interest.
So there was a picture on the screen, and the pigeon, every time that he poked the boat on the screen, a treat came out. So he's like, fuck yeah. They train these pigeons to, like, you know, in this little viewfinder to, like, always click at the boat, and they fucking figured out that if they gave the pigeon enough treats, it would eventually kill itself into a boat. So I don't think they ever used it in combat, but the pigeon bomb did exist and was tested, and pigeons did die. So that is the first people guided, or the first, you know, organic guided bomb.
Pigeon missile. Yeah. I love it.
That's actually how I want to die.
by a pigeon missile?
I just want a
or
boat.
Or as the pigeon trying to get a treat.
What would the treat be like? Plates of lasagna? It's like, oh, fuck yeah. Italian night.
I want to look at a battleship and it just, you know, a cartoon illusion transforms into a giant hot dog and I just jump into the ocean and then I get shot down.
There is something like magical about not knowing which one's your last hot dog. Because to the pigeon, it was the same every time. It's like, oh, I just do this and I get a treat.
Yeah,
and then there's just like a slow motion video of the pigeon like flying toward that boat the last time, and he's just thinking about that treat, and then
no more treats.
Yeah, no more treats.
That pigeon was 23 treats in,
and then he's met with 73 virgin pigeons,
73 eggs.
That begs the question, though: were there gunners on the opposing side? Like, we have to be ready to shoot down some pigeons.
They didn't.
It was. It was inside. So, if you imagine a 500-pound bomb, like a traditional bomb, the pigeon's in the nose of the bomb, literally looking through a viewfinder, guiding the bomb. So every time the pigeon was inputting,
the pigeon's in the bomb. The
pigeon's in the bomb.
I thought the pigeon was wearing a little bomb.
Yeah, that's what I thought
pigeon,
too. That's
the pigeon what I is too. The guidance for the bomb. So the pigeon's the computer that's guiding the bomb. So he's literally like every adjustment he's making, the tail fins on the bomb are adjusting to go towards the thing. So the pigeon is guiding the fucking bomb, literally. It's a it's a literal pigeon guided bomb.
That seems like so much more work than what ended up happening.
Well, it's like,
why was this project scrapped? That's what I want to know.
You know, we got plenty of pigeons. I'm not entirely sure.
I think what happened was the U.S. military bought too many pigeons during World War II. And
yeah, I mean, they were for
they
other
had
things
to do something with them.
God, I fucking love death by pigeon.
Because pigeon armor wasn't catching on.
The thrust to weight ratio wasn't. Yeah. Once you like tired messenger pigeons just fall in the dead zone.
And when they tried to tie hand grenades to the pigeons, they didn't get very far. So they landed on pigeon guided missile system.
And it apparently was a thing that worked.
Also, when you said were there gunmen, I don't know how well this is gonna like vie for radio.
What, like shooting other pigeons at those pigeons?
I pictured like mice. I pictured a mouse on the back of the pigeon with a gun to take out any incoming pigeons. And then I pictured, well, then of course that suggests that there's enemy pigeons trying to shoot down our pigeons. And then I just started picturing the pigeon war.
But then that escalates into other birds of prey. You get like the seagulls in there. You don't want to fuck with the seagulls.
It's not their war. It's not their war.
Yeah,
they didn't take part. They were observers.
Would you say the seagulls are the Russians of the bird world?
I don't know, but they're like the fucking.
If provoked, they will kill.
Yeah, they're whatever the toughest, most like nomadic version of people are. That's a seagull.
I got to be honest with you. Totally off topic, but pelicans scare the hell out of me.
They'll eat anything.
Pelicans, yeah.
Yeah, they'll eat other pelicans.
You ever been up close and personal with a pelican?
No.
I have.
I don't like how they swallow everything whole, and then you're trapped in their sack for a while, just like squirming.
Their face sack?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's frightening.
As dead. They purge
it's
the
absolutely
water.
Absolutely frightening.
Dead like a doll's eyes, just above the big sack.
Well, you've seen a movie from the fucking 80s. That's one.
I know the line.
Okay. That's
unlike fair. Baron, who doesn't know the Footloose reference. And you're into theater, so
I just saw RoboCop. Like 2 months ago.
Oh, that's a good one, though.
Poor you, though.
Oh, RoboCop's great.
Have you seen the, there's a version of RoboCop that is the rated X version?
No.
I highly suggest after watching RoboCop the first time, find the unrated version and watch it again. It is so much more fucking violent.
Is there a RoboCop sex scene?
No, there's no sex. This the violence was so out of this fucking world. Like, the guy was trying to be true to the comic book, right? Mm. So he made the shit, like, it's insane how much blood is poured in RoboCop.
I pictured his codpiece, like, and then like
fun side note, they had pigeons as stagehands just dropping gallons of blood,
you know. That's a
well after
size.
The war they needed work when they came back stateside, and yes. the cinema industry was they had a need for tiny little bird beaks.
Pigeon economy
is
doing great.
Pigeon accomplished. all right, so I have a bunch of little ones instead of one giant story.
Can I make one more joke?
You can.
A little pigeon union. Yep, like a labor union for pigeons is adorable.
Ooh.
With like little pigeon teamsters.
No clever
out.
Pun in there or anything?
just picture it.
I would just reject this whole thing.
You know, this ties all back to the first rocket.
The Opinion. Here's a fun American one. All right. So I kind of
want to. That
was like,
a fun American one.
Here's another fun American one. Sorry. I've got all these Russian ones lined up because this is the fucking grand finale. So if we're going to. Let's dip into nuclear for a little while because, like, it's the end result of rockets, right? You know, ICBMs and big explosions and things.
We didn't even get into that.
So when America was testing nuclear weapons, at some point they decided to put one in an artillery gun, like a howitzer. You know what that is, right?
Obviously.
Like field artillery. Mm-hmm. So they put a fucking nuclear bomb in an artillery piece, and these guys had to shoot this fucking thing, and it you know, they only go like, what, maybe a mile?
Not far enough.
So a very small nuclear weapon was, and then this little mushroom cloud appears in the horizon. The guys are fucking terrified. 50s footage is the best. There's also this fun thing.
Was this Nikolai's idea?
It might have been, man. It might have been.
I'm going to get anyone that reads this. It is my last joke.
This one is a rocket. This is one of my favorite ones. So in the 50s, they were scared of the Russians coming over the North Pole with a shitload of bombers, right? Like that was the idea at that point, right? So
still
like,
afraid of that.
Oh, yeah. Well, not bombers, be ICBMs, but same thing. So the Americans were like, how are we going to shoot down these fucking planes if they send like 1,000 of them at once like we did in World War II? Mm-hmm. So they came up with the Air-to-A Genie, which is a nuclear rocket that planes would fire. So the F-106 was the fighter of the time. What the F-106 would do is, like, we see a cloud of Russian fucking things coming over there. So they were like, we'll send a medium-sized nuclear rocket into the formation and just fucking blow them all up at once. But what they didn't realize is, like, the closing velocity of the two things, so you got a fighter coming at, like, Mach 2, and these planes coming, like, probably, like, 600 knots or whatever.
All things that I know exactly what you're talking about.
Mach 2 is twice the speed of sound. 600 knots is below the speed of sound. So the closing velocity is very high. So when you're shooting this thing, you want to be within the range of it, but you also have to make sure the pilot survives. So they came up with this maneuver where they would shoot
it. Why do we care
it.
So much if the pilot survives?
Well, because you don't want to just kill the guy. You want to let him think he has a chance.
You don't tell the pilot that he's going to die.
He didn't have a very good chance. But they made a maneuver regardless.
You just make sure he uses his blinker.
You
that's vital over
Canada.
Corey
Burgess.
Yeah. Poor Canada is going to be brand in the front of this thing.
They're a part of what's known as the Lenny Project. And the test of the Lenny Project is if you don't get the reference, you're right where you belong.
Out to pasture. So these planes would come in, coming very fast, and they would do a loop. So they would fire the missile and immediately do a loop up in the air and try to come back around this way. So they basically like lob it sideways.
So they try to run away from the bomb.
Yes.
By the way, nobody could see what you were doing right now.
So imagine my hands are flying towards each other. My right hand is the American hand. And
this is great. This is great.
As it's going up in the air, they essentially lob the rocket, banking on ballistic velocity, taking the rest of the way, and the plane does a loop-de-loop and departs the other direction.
That's pretty badass.
It was, except for that, you know.
I feel like it doesn't work.
It probably wasn't going to work. So everyone would have died. All the planes. Not to mention all the nuclear bombs in the Russian planes would have fallen to Canada. And you know, God willing, all the safety mechanisms work, and the nuclear bomb that hit the other nuclear bombs didn't set off all the other nuclear bombs. Anyways.
Did they test it out with pigeons first? Is that how they knew it wasn't going
to
work?
They did not do that, but I'm sure there's good footage of it somewhere.
I am going to devote the rest of my life to joining the UN just to lobby that we replace all fighter jets with pigeons.
I love death by pigeons. That as a concept, as a word, as words put together, I just fucking love it.
You know, if you freeze a pigeon and launch it out of a cannon, it's a very, very solid projectile.
It's another kind of pigeon death.
Plus, there'll be a very confusing crime scene when they find you impaled by pieces of pigeon.
Well, by that point, it's thawed, and the pigeon just looks inconspicuous.
This goddamn pigeon was supersonic.
It's like that riddle where that guy dies from
by an icicle.
Yeah, no. By an icicle, like but the icicle melts.
Exactly that.
His head's caved in, and there's a pigeon.
But like pieces of pigeon, very high projectile.
Well, I like to pretend like the pigeon lives.
All right, so back to Russian rockets because this is my favorite of the Russian rockets, the N1, which we started to get into last time, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is the Russian moon rocket. So the Russians, in all their infinite wisdom, came to the moon idea about 4 years after we'd already started development of the Saturn V rocket, which eventually brought our astronauts to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
So they were like, we can catch them. So they gave them less time, less money, less resources, and said, just get after it. So
that's how the best things are made.
They built this fucking thing. The N1 looks like a fucking, it looks like an upside down snow cone with a point each, like the triangle cone, you know? Mm-hmm. And
I did look up a picture after you told me to look it up last week.
Yeah. At the bottom of it are 30... where's my fucking notes on this?
Pigeons? That's never not going to be funny.
Yeah. So it's fair.
You hit fucking Baron's comedic juice with the pigeons. He's now imprinted on you for life.
That's fair. That's fair. So at the bottom of this monstrosity, like the Saturn V was five engines, right? It was, you know, you could like look at it and be like, oh, like look at the five engines go. The Russians were like, niet. They put 30 fucking engines on the bottom of the first stage of the rocket. So it's got 30 engines.
Was there a reason why they didn't just make a bigger engine?
No, because it's Russia. Everything's if you look at like Russian tech, like Russian designs always have this certain aesthetic to them. They just look like
more of what they have instead of a new bigger one.
Just bigger and more insane is usually their like end result. They're like, fuck what it's supposed to do. Like, we just want it to look fucking awesome. Basically the biggest bottle rocket in the world, right? So the first one they launch, all 30 of these fucking engines fire, except for the number 12 stops going off, so they try to make it symmetrical. They go to the number 24, turn that off, and they try to like balance the rocket. It gets a couple feet, and it ends up exploding and landing about 50 kilometers away.
Which doesn't sound very far to an American like me that doesn't know kilometers.
Yeah, not very far at all. So,
did they just have a guy just like lawnmower style just pulling the cords of all the
he walks around with a lighter lighting all these
35 individual Russians just frantically trying to be the first one to start the engine so
one volunteer per engine
here.
With lighter. So all right, so that one was like a, you know, a catastrophe. Obviously the second one is my favorite Russian shit of all time. The second one goes up in the air I think it went like maybe like 100 meters up. And all the engines fail, and it just comes back down. And it is aside from nuclear explosions, the largest explosion that's ever happened on Earth. it's the largest non-nuclear explosion that's ever happened. This whole thing, like 8 fucking billion tons of it was kerosene was the fuel for it too. So I didn't look up that. But like the entire rocket explodes. It fucking decimates the launch pad. They can't launch again for like 4 months because they have to reconstruct the entire thing. Luckily, beforehand, they had evacuated everybody. So they got everybody out. Before the launch, I guess somebody had a hankering for like, oh, maybe this thing's going to blow up a little bit. Maybe we should like get some people out of here.
He had been to the first one.
Yeah. There's a quote. I'm going to paraphrase this, but he basically says, I know what the end of the world looks like. It happened in front of me today. It's like the fucking fireball.
Not the best vote of confidence
space
program.
It is fucking an incredible Russian failure.
He was shot behind the ear the next day.
Yes, he was.
It's called the Nyadilev disaster. It killed like 300 people. Actually, so the funny thing about that is that happened.
That is a pretty funny thing that happened.
Yeah. Well, that's Russian.
Well, there was another rocket explosion at the same day, like on the same day, also Russian. And I think it happened on October 24th, 1950-ish. But anyway.
This one's way later. So that's before. So they blew.
Oh.
Maybe that's the reason they evacuated people on this day.
Oh, maybe.
That's probably why.
Everything went to shit when they stopped using pigeons.
Yeah, you know? It happens quick. What was that explosion? Because that must have been like early in the space program when they were just like, yeah, stand close. Why not? Have a good look.
Yeah, I don't want to talk out of my ass because I don't remember all the details of it, but there was one called the Nyadilev disaster or something like that, and two rocket explosions happened on October 24th, and now the Russians will never launch a rocket on October 24th anymore.
Not even bottle rockets.
Yeah. Not
penalty,
nothing.
Bullet behind the ear in the woods.
Or death by bear.
Pigeon.
Death by bear.
What if death you kill bear? Pigeon. If you kill bear, you get on space shuttle.
Congrats, you've been promoted, comrade.
Yes, yes.
That bear is your co-pilot.
Your weird flight. Bear wakes up, the fucking sedatives finally wear off.
He's not thrilled about
it. Not thrilled about this at all. Well, I am not built for flight.
So last week we talked about why V2 rockets. We talked about V2 rockets quite a bit. It was my favorite part of the episode. It was my favorite part of the research for multiple reasons. I think I kind of clamor to whatever society was most interested in at the times that we cover with the least explanation, like the least obvious explanation. Because at first I thought, well, I guess it was just a really good instrument of war, so I went to go fact check that. So on a previous episode, I think it was BJ that had mentioned that along with approximately 120, no, I had said 120 Nazi scientists, but you were aware of the scientists.
Mm-hmm.
What you brought up was that we recovered enough V2 tech to create our own V2.
Mm-hmm.
We actually, I found out, recovered enough to create 80 of them. We made a lot of them, and we made a lot of use of them in NASA for a long time.
I'm sure.
So. It was also mentioned that we took the chief pioneer of the V2, Wernher von Braun, and several of his Nazi buddies that became the heads of NASA in the 50s.
Werner von Braun and his Nazi friends.
It's Werner and friends.
Hello, no peeking in my designs. You can have me only.
I said no peeking. But so anyway, all that aside, why was this rocket so amazing that it was worth absolving over 100 Nazis of their terrible crimes and giving them top government positions with like pensions and health benefits and probably nice places to live? So like I said, at first, I started looking at the efficacy of war. So the V-2, or the, as I said last week, the Vengeance 2 missile was pretty much pushed into a hasty production pretty late in the war because Hitler was starting to feel like he might lose and he wasn't too proud to explore.
But like vengeance for what?
I get into that. So he wasn't too proud to explore Hail Mary options, like space-age remote-guided missiles that could terrify other allies. Like it was one of his, he had a couple, and this was like a maybe this will save us, you know, because really at the end of the day it was poor strategy. He tried to take Russia in winter, we all know how that went.
Yep.
And then, you know,
it was that or the Holy Grail, right?
The Holy Grail?
Wasn't he trying to find the Holy Grail?
Yeah.
There was a bunch of occult shit happening.
Yeah.
Fucking crazy.
It's fucking crazy. And I hope, you know, I know that we don't set out trying to talk about these things, but I hope we eventually talk about that. So. It's
fucking fascinating.
The way that they were named Vengeance, by the way, is because these were created in retaliation to the devastating bombings that the Allied forces started carrying out on major German towns once the tides of the war started toward the end of the war. Like, we got more comfortable with our air supremacy, and we bombed the shit out of German cities. And so he, like, as a, and I think, I didn't find any of this directly. This is speculation, but as an attempt to boost morale, these were the vengeance missiles. These were like how we were gonna get back at the Allies because they were, it was superior.
I mean, firebombing was a thing that was happening every single day in German cities. So.
They got fucked up, and I don't necessarily get into that, but just know that it was enough to make Hitler mad enough to make a new bomb. So over the span of a couple years, it was like less than 2 years that they were manufactured, they made 5,200 of these things.
Holy shit.
But from every record that I could show, the best approximation I get is that 3,100 of them were actually launched, and they were launched at Belgium, the UK, France, Netherlands, and even Germany itself. Once the Allies started encroaching on Germany, they weren't above shooting their own fucking cities.
Well, yeah.
Only 11 of them, though, but still, what the fuck?
Three of them were experimental prototypes filled with bees.
The bee twos.
You guys thought I was going to say pigeons, didn't you?
I did.
I was ready for it, but no.
You know, they say the key to a long relationship is always being able to surprise your partner. So there we are.
How we keep the magic together.
Well, we're more than just recording buddies.
I don't want to fall in love.
So in terms of stats, it was pretty impossible to find clean data in regards to the V2's impact and exact numbers on the war overall. Understandably, I think everything was a little fucking crazy, and it was kind of probably hard to keep record of how much those bombs were destroying. Especially because if you're one of those people keeping records of the destruction, you might get destroyed too.
Yep.
But the British did a really good job of keeping record of damage, both done to infrastructure and lives lost, probably because they wanted to hold a grudge for a while after. And by what I could find, somewhere around approximately 1,300 of those 3,100 V2s were launched directly at London. And of this came approximately 3,000 casualties, although other less reliable sources, as I cited last week, were 5,000. For this little InfoCast experiment, let's split the difference and let's say 4,000. So that means an average of 3.7 deaths per missile. So this prompts me to point out that they're pretty ineffective, that these giant revolutionary breaking the sound barrier missiles only killed 3 people per missile. You could get more devastation out of a fucking Molotov cocktail, probably.
Well, but I mean, the revolutionary part was the fact that it sort of got where it was going. It was a guided missile.
Well, we're going to get there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I know it doesn't matter, and if you don't have the data for it, that's fine. I am curious about, obviously, okay, from a Nazi perspective, though, I'm gonna
hold on. You gotta put on your little Nazi hat.
I got to put on my Nazi hat. But how do you know how much like they were spending on this thing? Like
that was really hard to quantify because you couldn't equate labor costs because of like we talked about last week. It was mostly Jewish slaves and Holocaust camp prisoners that had to make these rockets.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I think I'm going to leave that one alone.
Yeah, I left it out for a reason.
Just put it right there and not touch it.
I know that we cover dark subjects, but I do try to do it with a sense of like to further the narrative. So if it's something that's just depressing and it doesn't further the narrative, I tend to cut it out.
Well, I mean, it's part of the thing, though. Like, Nazis got as far as they did because of slave labor.
And I did mention that.
It's like, it's also why America exists in the shape that it does right now.
Well, yeah.
And we mentioned that, too. But, you know, like we'll talk about with other things with space rocketry, I don't mention it because it doesn't further the story. But I did, you know, what I mean by that is, like, yes, I mentioned that they were created in concentration camps. I don't get into the fact that on any given day, you could see a bunch of prisoners hanging from cranes for attempting to sabotage the missiles.
Hey, everybody, it's Arts and Crafts Day.
Oh, my God.
Can you say vengeance?
Okay.
10 points awarded for that entirely distasteful joke. That
Jesus
was
Christ.
Pretty much hilarious.
Like I said, long relationships always surprise me. So the other aspect I wanted to...
I'm going to drink a happy amber to solve that one.
Yeah, please do.
Bring myself back to the
I might spit some of that into my mouth. So I am... Did you just open that can with a knife?
Yeah.
Do you not have fingernails?
It's just easier than like... My fingers are all fucking banged up from welding all day.
Yeah. Why are you banging them up welding?
They just get burned and they're sensitive.
You punch the fucking...
Yeah, I punch metal to melt.
Yeah, punch metal till it melts. Yes.
Boxing, welding, same thing if you're strong.
So then I looked into maybe it was the psychological aspect of war that gave them the advantage because that was definitely touched upon a lot in the research. I did find several firsthand recollections, but the best one that I found, which is anecdotal and I can't confirm it, but it was on Reddit. And it was somebody's grandfather that had survived bombings in London, both from the V1s and the V2s. And I'm paraphrasing a bit, but he said that the V1 raids were scary. V1 was the predecessor, I guess, the predecessor to the V2.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a gasoline-fueled rocket that you needed to shoot from a plane, and they were slower. So they were affectionately nicknamed the Doodlebugs. I don't know if you knew that, Baron. I keep calling you Baron, BJ.
Nope.
But there was an opportunity to shoot them down, so people weren't so terrified of them, because if you had your anti-aircraft missiles, you could shoot down the V1s, and you could hear them coming, so you had time to get to your bunkers.
That sounds horrifying, though. Like some missile that's just like...
They weren't shot from planes. Those were shot from... ground-based launchers. Like the V2 was like a traditional rocket as we imagine it today. Mm-hmm. The V1 was more of a plane shape with a rocket on the back of it that used just straight.
So I read that they started with planes and then got deterred from doing the planes, which led them to the ground launchings.
Oh, okay.
Because the planes kept getting shot down, and that was more expensive to lose a plane and a bomb than the later adaptation of shooting the rockets from ground
sites. I'll allow this train of thought.
Hey, I'm just saying what I found. But, and yes, Baron, that is scary. That's fucking terrible. Like, if you just heard the bzzz and then the alarms. But he said just knowing about the existence of the V2s kept people in perpetual state of fear, because the V2s were the first ballistic missile to travel at the speed of sound, which meant there was no way to know that they were coming. As he put it, one moment there was nothing, and then they were just there. So no warning, all of a sudden, the building next to you just fucking blows up. It was intimidating enough that we allocated a large amount of our effort to bombing and then raiding launch sites that we knew about. Eventually, we took all the V2 sites, and the last one fell about a week before we ended the war.
Were they able to launch them from a boat, or did they have to like open up like a silo underground or something?
They started thinking about silos, but then they wanted it like mobile, so they put like mobile launch sites with a close proximity to railroads so that they could transport the bombs via railroad and then somehow get them onto these mobile launchers and shoot them. Hmm. I think the silo, they decided that it was going to take too long to build the silos, and then it would be too stationary. Like, you know, ostensibly they could move it if they knew they were going to get fucked up there. But a silo, you can't move.
But you could put a babushka on top.
The old babushka.
Just one big babushka face. What is this? Oh, she's smiling.
Babushka. Okay, we go away.
What you don't know is the dushka beneath.
Bigger babushka.
That's a grandfather.
So that's arguably a decent reason to want the revolutionary weapons tech in case we found ourselves in another ground war in the near future, but that's not really it. See, we had the technology to make rockets that fast. As we discussed, America's own Robert Goddard was the first to actually successfully make a liquid-fueled rocket. So we could ostensibly have made a V2, like not a V2, but a rocket that went that fast on its own eventually. What we didn't have, that the Nazis did have, was a proper guidance system, as BJ brought up. See, before the V2, most missiles had to be delivered via plane, like I mentioned, and or from, you know, a ground location that was fairly inaccurate, and they had no way to really guide these except for maybe pigeons. And the approximations had to be done. They were just like approximations done by the men sending them that they had to calculate on the spot. So it was ineffective. There's a huge room for human error, and, you know, just sucked.
Well, plus we weren't aiming at just like a continent. It was like the Germans were just shooting with fucking anything.
They're right? just shooting at the cities. Yeah, just like, whatever.
They were vaguely shooting towards England, like wherever it fucking landed. Who cares?
Yeah.
But like we weren't gonna do that because like we're not. There's collateral damage that we thought about.
Yeah, we definitely never do that.
No, yeah,
not we definitely never kill civilians. But what the Nazis did with a dual gyroscope system was what Wernher von Braun and his friends created the world's first guidance system for a ballistics missile. How it worked, and this is, I know we try to not be a tech podcast, but this is very interesting. You had electric leads and monitors that ran from the gyroscopes to a series of vanes at the base of the rocket near the thrusters. And vanes are basically short maneuverable fins for planes and rockets. What?
What? Keep going. Keep going.
What you say is you have large veiny cock.
All I'm picturing is a veiny dick. Yes. Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay, I'm 5 years old.
Did everyone get it out? Is it good?
Start at the top.
I didn't just
start
get that. I got it out.
I didn't realize this just became the dick hour.
They are shaped like dicks. I mean, let's be honest.
One gyroscope was responsible for elevation and one was for trajectory. So the sensors were set to a pre-programmed destination in mind, and each gyroscope would be responsible for telling the electrical monitors if the rocket was doing the right thing to get there based on the position of each gyroscope. And so, if the rocket was headed in the wrong direction or was veering off course, the gyroscopes would let the monitors know, which would then, in turn, cause the vanes to correct the path of the rocket. And this is beautifully displayed, as I saw, in an example of test footage from an early test of a V2 that the Nazis took, where the thrusters underperformed, resulting in a V2 rocket that couldn't quite get past a certain elevation from launch, but at the same time hovers almost perfectly in place as the guidance system continues to keep the rocket on course, which at that time, albeit, was perpetually stuck in the moment of its course that it was stuck in before the thrusters underperformed. And I had no fucking idea how the Germans resolved this because they had a bomb hovering a couple hundred meters over the launch site. Perpetually, by design, stuck in place. So eventually, I guess, like, it ran out of fuel, dropped, and they ran? Or, like, they shot it out of the sky? Like, because it wasn't, like, remote detonated, I don't think. And
wait,
they couldn't stop
again?
It.
Wait, so they
it was, shot up, and I didn't bring this up, but I'll bring it up now. The thrusters are supposed to bring, like, 24 tons of, like, propulsion or whatever, however you translate that into kinetic energy.
Right.
And it ended up performing at about 12 or 13. So it stayed at above... You know, I think I'm approximating like 100, 200 meters above the launch site. It could only get off the ground, but the gyroscopes were working. So the vanes kept shifting to keep it where it was supposed to be in that moment. Had the thrusters have been strong enough to keep pushing it, it would have changed based on their programming.
It might not have had any, like, well, I mean, if the thrusters gave up at a certain point, probably ran out of fuel, and then it probably had no explosive load if it was a test. Was it a test?
It was a test, but I like to think that the Germans didn't fuck around, and there was like a live bomb.
Well, I mean, they were like, anytime you test something like that, you're in a bunker. Like, you don't just, like, watch it. Like, hey, push the button. Well, there it goes.
Unless they were super cocky.
You're fucking, like, 10 miles away. Like, yeah. Where did it end up?
I guess
let's go find out.
I guess it's blood, but it is a hilarious conundrum to find yourself in.
Okay, Peter.
Yep.
I'm going to be very still. I'm going to need some rope and a lot of pillows.
Are you talking
a lot
about
of pillows?
Nazi cowboy lasso right now? Lassoing the bomb out of the sky? Yep. And anyway.
On horseback. Hans, get him!
Jumps up a mountain, fucking wrangles the missile back down to the earth.
Yeah! Yeah!
Yes, I am cowboy, like right. American cowboy.
And then he blew up.
Yes.
Yeah. And so it was actually less about the destructive power of the rockets themselves or even the propulsion, and it was primarily about the guidance system that we sought to steal from the Nazis so that we could get to space, and we did. Wernher von Braun, while working for NASA, actually designed the first rocket to ever go to the moon with a person on it.
Fucking A.
And a fun fact, at one point, when I Googled, quote, what was it like during a V2 raid in... Google filled in Pokemon Go. And I made a note of that because what the fuck?
it got real in Pokemon Go.
Why was
Go.
That Googled ever? And what is Pokemon Go like?
Why is there V2 rockets?
Why are there V2 rocket raids in Pokemon Go?
Because the Germans made the fucking Pokemon. This is what's happened here.
They do not like our freedom.
No, they don't like the freedoms.
But they must catch them all.
Is Pikachu the master race?
Electric type is the master race, yeah. Here we go. Come on. You did that great concentration camp joke earlier. Let's bring it.
I mean, there's an obvious like Pikachu thing happening there.
Oh,
but like,
my God.
But that doesn't align with the story, so I can't.
Is it too late to not be in this podcast?
Pikachu. Oh, God, that's the premise for a very bad movie.
All right, so I got a short one, and then maybe that's it. I have animals in space. So we basically have we sent a lot of animals into space before we sent humans just to see, you know, if the conditions were survivable, how to make the conditions survivable, et cetera. So in 1948, we try and send a Reus monkey named Albert into space using a V2 rocket. We fail, and he only makes it to subspace at an altitude of 39 miles above sea level.
But he survives, and everything's fine.
No, he suffocates in the rocket. But he wasn't the first animal. That was just the first animal of note. The first animal that successfully did make it to space were actually a bunch of fruit flies. But no one likes to talk about the fruit flies. But in 1947, we launched another V2 rocket into space. It made it to space, and then the nose cone detached and then came down to Earth via parachute, and we retrieved the fruit flies, and the fruit flies survived. And then we were able to it was just to see if organic matter could survive in space first. That was our litmus test. If flies can make it, we're good to go.
This is the CIA. We don't talk about the fruit flies. You're coming with us. Can you?
Who told you about the fruit flies?
ma'am.
However, unlike the fruit flies, Albert II would make it successfully into space in 1949. However, he would die upon impact. Upon returning to Earth because the parachute malfunctioned.
But he made it.
He made it to space.
He fucking made it.
He got the accolade of being the first non-human primate into space before he just fucking woo, down to Earth.
Imagine the fucking terror from the atmosphere to the ground.
I don't think he knew what was going on. And also, don't picture like a
chimpanzee. He knew he was fucking falling for sure.
He knew it was bad. Yeah, don't. If you're picturing like a chimpanzee or something... So, yeah, it's not one of those monkeys. It was like a cute little bonobo-looking monkey.
Oh, okay.
Like the one that the organ grinders make dance. And
The one that killed everybody in Outbreak?
Yes. And not the one, and not to make it too terrifying.
The one that died in Indiana Jones?
First. Did he die?
Yeah, they poisoned him, remember? He eats the poison dates.
Raiders
of the Lost
Ark. Then they eat his brain.
They're just as bad as NASA.
No, it was later, yeah.
Okay.
Different monkey. Anyway, same principle.
I haven't seen that 80s movie either.
Oh, all right. This is enough depressing monkey facts. I'm not going to share what Albert looked like in the rocket ship. But I will share that there would be eventually 30 more primates in succession that we launch into space. None would ever fly twice.
Because they all made it and they were sent back to their family and everything was fine.
Well, there was actually five Alberts.
Because they were all just... waiting to...
Well, they didn't all die in flight.
This is the origin story for Jumanji.
Albert Ford died by a self-inflicted gun wound to the head.
Years later from PTSD.
Yeah. Because he saw God out in space. Pretty sure that's what's waiting for us.
Did they put a window on it at least so they could like see where they went?
I don't know if that's better or worse.
Can you imagine the terror of a primate that's never left the planet being launched into
a primate that's never left... a 4-kilometer area
of
let
jungle,
alone the
yeah.
planet.
Oh, that's so fucking mean. Just like just imagine their little brains trying to process what's happening as you fall for fucking ever.
Yeah.
You fall for 40 miles.
Albert Four came back and he was glowing blue like Mr. Manhattan from Watchmen.
Oh God.
They just had to put him down.
Super monkey.
Yeah.
Fucking space jizz, man.
And there are a lot more animals that went to space, but we're not going to talk about it because, like I said earlier, some history is just fucking sad with no benefit to cover.
You don't know if you don't try.
Not going to do it. Not going to do it.
You know the animal they should have sent into space to begin with.
Grimace?
All right.
From the McDonald's gang?
He's perfectly aerodynamic. I think he would have made it.
He's the only one that would have survived impact.
Yeah. You know what? You can't fucking kill Grimace. And that's what I'm thinking about right now.
No, it's not that you can't Grimace. You can't kill Grimace. It's you can't kill Grimace.
Bone. Bone.
He's the most dangerous thing.
He keeps coming.
I was going to say man, but I don't think he's a man.
Hi,
he's a demagogue of hamburgers.
A demoblob?
Do you guys have anything to conclude on? What was your favorite part of Rockets?
Oh, God. I don't have anything else in here.
You know what? My favorite part is, as evidenced by my research choices, I love the Russians. I love what the Russians were doing.
I think we all, yeah.
They were cobbling together shit. They were coming up with bombs. They were doing all sorts of crazy shit. Those crazy Russians.
I like
love
the ground rats.
Ground rats are fun. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Because I looked up pictures of them.
Oh, really?
They look like horseshoe crabs with spikes and a rocket on the back. They're pretty fucking crazy.
It's too bad you can just put a trash can over them and then.
Or a trash can over yourself, and that's a ground rat shit.
Yeah. Bulletproof armor, rocketproof armor,
rocketproof armor, if you would.
God, I don't know if that's a favorite, man. There's so many fun. Like,
what was your fave?
I just think the first army that like. Truly was the first army that like face fucking rockets for the first time, right? They're just walking up. They're like, gentlemen, today's our day. And then they see the fucking like the clouds and the fucking rain of fire. And they're just like,
what the fuck?
Oh, fuck. Just the fucking, it's almost as bad as the first monkey to like reach orbit. You know, like the confusion must have been.
Also the first monkey to talk.
Yeah.
He said, what the fuck?
It's like if an Apache attacked an island that had never had people on it before, or like it's a tribe that's been there for 300 years.
They just worship the Apache after that. Yeah, hope for the best.
It spit fire. It kill. It is God.
Maybe that's why they called it like flying crows with magic fire, because you know the first people that saw it, they just didn't know. Like, is that?
What are those birds?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ!
Fucking firebirds!
Jesus! Dragons! Fuck!
I could say like just to complete the arc though, like. Going back to the Middle East stuff we got to do. I got to sit in an Apache helicopter one time, right? And they put me in the back seat where they have all
badass.
Where they have all the aiming stuff. And the guy was
the
like,
aiming stuff.
The, you know, there's a screen and this.
So you got a formal education on the aiming Apache then.
Yeah. So
this is the aiming stuff.
It's a basically there's a big gun on the front of it. It's not rockets, but there are rockets. But this is the aiming pod for all of the things, right? Mm-hmm. So we
I like that you upped it to aiming pod.
It's yeah, that's what it is. So like it basically it's a camera that can focus on anything and they can just like go like.
Destruction, so they could just
So we're sitting there. It's on the ground. Obviously, it's off. It's disarmed. But he's like, check this out. So we pick a dude on the base, right?
You pick a dude on the base.
On the base. We're in Afghanistan. I'm sitting in an Apache.
Engaging kill mode.
I feel like everything you're gonna say after this is not supposed to be done.
It's probably not supposed to be done. So anyway, the guy's like, check this out. So we start to aim the thing, right? And he tells me how to like aim it. And I start fucking with the buttons. And I pick somebody about a mile away on the other side of the base. And then I'm like, enhance. It gets a little closer. Like, enhance. It gets a little closer. And the fucking thing's following him now. So I'm like, enhance. Next thing I know, it's just a face on the screen, just a head. And there's a little tracker thing, and you can hear the gun.
Oh, jeez.
And like,
that's surreal.
So just to like go see how the full arc of how far we've come, and it's gone a lot further since then. That was 2007. So from like the first guy that was like, fuck it, shoot that shit that way, to this is like, I'm going to kill the shit out of you, specifically you, guy on the other side of base, violently.
And leave your toupee.
With as much effort as a neckbeard playing Call of Duty on his couch. In the back of a helicopter.
Dude, the clarity of this thing was fucking horrifying. So
Jesus
Christ. We've come a long way.
I think that's a great way to round off the segment. You used to have to know the secrets of gunpowder, be able to fashion a rocket and be brave enough to launch these unpredictable things at your enemy close enough that you're still in danger. And now BJ can kill someone by touching a screen.
Yes. All you need is a fat thumb.
All right. What are our socials, Baron?
Hey, so I've got a thing to throw at everybody. If you can remember the name of the G.I. Joe character with missiles on his shoulders and his thighs and his abdomen, and he fired like 16 missiles every time he got excited, then please email me at infocast5000@gmail.com, because I've been trying to think of whatever the fuck his name is for the last 15 minutes.
All right.
That's, yeah, but
is that
also,
your sign off?
Also, check out if Also, check out infocast5000.wordpress.com. We got a website.
We got a website.
And
sorry, with more enthusiasm. We got a website.
We got a website, baby. And also, I guess that's about it for right now.
Yeah, check us out on Instagram too.
Yo,
we
yeah,
post
we got
some sweet fucking content. Depends on the week though. This week it's gonna be great. Check it out. Come on, do
come
it.
On, look at,
do it.
Stuff.
Do it, and check out BJ's social.
It's there.
Yeah,
for
what
the
you got,
do
BJ?
It. What is mine? At Med for Dead Pod is my podcast,
and we're gonna at you. We're gonna at you as the kids say.
And instead of my my usual furniture one, you can go to at Drum Beej on Instagram.
Oh shit.
DrumBeej.
I didn't even know that.
Now you do.
I thought I was going to learn anything today. And, that's what I learned today, is that BJ has a third Instagram.
Hey, also, check out Medicine for the Dead. I listened to a couple episodes myself. Great podcast. If you're looking for a podcast where quippy guys are talking about, you know, fun topics.
And a lady.
If you caught the first couple episodes, it's all dudes, and then we got like we get cheeky with it later, and now it's dudes and a chick.
If you're looking for some kind of podcast where it evolves from a bunch of dudes to a chick, check out Medicine for the Dead.
No surgery required. If you listen to our podcast, you'll hear a podcast.
And I thought of something today. If you've made it this far, then I'm sure you're willing to take it a little further. And I thought, hey, after we release our proper episodes, if there is something that you felt we could have covered a little bit more in the initial one that you want us to cover Dirty Bits, shoot Baron an email at infocast5000@gmail.com. Not only will you get to listen to the content that you want to listen to, but Baron will get to talk to someone besides me, which is good for
everyone. You'll get a reply from me.
Pretty quick.
Yeah. And you don't know what it's going to be.
Deep and passionate.
All right, this is where we're signing off.
Bye.
Bye.
Say bye, BJ.
Oh, bye.